May it please the court. My name is Michael Bourne, and I represent Mr. Fleming in the matter before the court today. The question before the court is whether the trial court properly dismissed the case under CRS 2410-108, finding no waiver of immunity under the Governmental Immunity Act. This dismissal was an error because Auraria did have notice of the dangerous condition, because it's undisputed that Auraria, through its agents and employees, actually created the dangerous condition. First, I'll go through a brief recap of the facts. Mr. Fleming suffered a femur fracture as a result of a fall on the Auraria campus. He was a student at Metro State at the time. The fall occurred approximately 5 p.m. as Mr. Fleming was leaving his last class of the day. It had snowed that morning, but the snow had stopped by the time the fall had occurred. The day before, it was a relatively warm January day. According to the weather data, there was about 0.7 inches of snow in the morning of the fall. It's a rare policy to use de-icer throughout the campus if the snow event is over 0.5 inches. It's undisputed that Auraria did not use de-icer on the day prior to the snow event. It's one of their procedures to be proactive in this type of snow removal. If a weather event is expected, they put down snow remover mag chloride de-icer in anticipation of a snow event.
Pardon me for interrupting, Mr. Bourne. I'm sorry to hit you early out of the box, but you have just mentioned that it was a comparatively nice day the day before. So at that point, this was not an icy area, is that correct?
The day before, no, it was not.
All right, thank you.
If I could follow up on that question, does our record indicate when the ice formed?
Well, we know from the weather data and from the testimony of the witnesses, it started snowing the day of the fall early in the morning. Mr. Fleming reached campus about, I believe he said, about 8 or 9 in the morning that day. He was there all day. And it was a rain sleet mix in the morning. By the time he left his last class, it had stopped snowing. The record is not exactly clear about what time that was. It was sometime in the mid-afternoon.
Can you tell us how we then reconcile this case with the Smith versus Town of Snow Mountain Village, where a division of this court affirmed the trial court's finding of no dangerous condition? And, you know, I think part of the analysis was there was simply no evidence about how long the ice had been present, so it's hard to determine whether or not the town knew or should have known. So how is this case different from that?
Well, here our big issue also is notice. The trial court did find in Mr. Fleming's favor on all the issues under the particular waiver position under 24-10-106, with the exception of notice. So, in our particular situation, what we do know is that snow removal crews reported to the campus that morning. And in the records, there's a couple different numbers thrown out. I think originally the number was 58, but according to the Auraria facilities manager, it was 15 to 20 employees doing snow removal. So Auraria employees were out doing snow removal. And the notice requirement, again, the undisputed expert testimony was that the actions of Auraria actually caused this particular condition. As Mr. Fleming was leaving class, 5 o'clock, there's an area in the middle of the campus called the Arts Plaza. It's near the Arts Building.
Pardon me, Mr. Bourne. I want to make sure I understand something that you just said. You said it's undisputed in the record that Auraria caused this condition. How does that square with the fact that Auraria had no control over the snowfall or the temperature?
Auraria didn't have any control over the weather conditions. But what Auraria did do, they violated their own snow removal procedures in two different ways. One, they weren't proactive with the de-icer. Two, once the snow started, there's no evidence that de-icer was used in the Arts Plaza at the area of the fall. If you take a look back at the transcript from the Trinity hearing, a witness, Professor Don Maloney, was actually a witness to the fall. He testified that he didn't see any sand, gravel, de-ice, or anything in the Arts Plaza in the aftermath of the fall. Arts Plaza is a fairly wide pedestrian area in the middle of campus. The procedure for removing snow in that area, the facilities management folks have these brush machines. Basically, it's a rotating brush that they attach to the front of a vehicle about the size of a golf cart. And the procedure is to remove the snow from the plaza. They typically start with a strip in the middle and they push it out. They're planted with trees on the side. So they pile the snow up in those areas and clear out the middle of the Arts Plaza. So the fall actually occurred. So Mr. Fleming and the professor were walking across the Arts Plaza in the middle, loose snow on each side. There's one strip about 4 feet wide through the middle. It had the appearance of being cleared of snow. As it turns out, actually there's a film of ice left over after the brush machine had passed over. The expert testimony was, even though that it looked like it was clear of loose snow, actually, since the ice was present there, there's a lower coefficient of friction through the area that had been passed over with the brush machine. So the loose snow had a little bit more grip, if you would say, than this area that had been passed over once. The reason why the ice was left over was the absence of the de-ice. That's what they use it for. The brush machine can't pick up 100% of loose snow, ice, that kind of thing. There's always something left over, according to Ms. Stodolo, which is the purpose of using the de-icer both before a snow event and during a snow event.
Pardon me for interrupting you again, Mr. Bourne, but I want to turn to the notice question. The statute talks about actual notice in this context, right?
Correct.
So we aren't talking about constructive notice, we're talking about actual notice, right?
Yes.
Would you explain your position to me about why Auraria had received actual notice of this condition?
The statute, the waiver provision, does state actual notice. The Martinez versus Weld County case, the court expands a little bit on what that actually means under the GIA, under the Government Immunity Act. And it stated in Martinez, the mere fact that the city had not received prior notice of the precise harm that occurred does not compel the conclusion that it did not have either constructive or actual notice of the alleged dangerous condition. Basically, in Martinez, there was no evidence of direct reporting, phone call, complaint about the ice on the particular day of that fall. Now, the court found a waiver of government immunity there because it looks like the evidence showed that this was a well-known problem area or something, a place that the governmental entity knew that ice builds up after a snowfall. Here in our situation, we get there a little bit different route, still using the Martinez type analysis. So yes, it's true, there's no car logs or letters written, at least in what was provided to us by the governmental entity, showing a complaint of the particular patch of ice that Mr. Fleming fell in on the date of the accident. But again, the employees were in the area doing snow removal, and the manner in which they performed snow removal on the day of the fall is the reason for the fall. If they'd gone through with the de-icer, or if they had cleared the entire plaza, this strip that appeared to have been clear, which was basically an invitation for folks to walk on it, wouldn't have been icy, wouldn't have had a different coefficient of friction than the rest of the Arts Plaza, wouldn't have been a surprise to Mr. Fleming. So in Martinez, the court found waiver because it was a well-known problem area. Here, the argument is that they actually created the condition. If they hadn't passed over with the brush, the fall probably would not have occurred.
So if they had cleared the whole plaza with the brush, then the entire plaza would have been a dangerous condition?
Potentially, Your Honor, one of the things that our expert talked about was the unexpectedness of transitioning from loose snow to the ice slick. So if the entire, and there was some discussion in Trinity hearing about folks' expectations as far as when they're walking on different types of surfaces. For example, when we've all seen someone walk on like an ice skating rink or something and then take a very stilted, upright walk with small steps. If the entire plaza had been cleared, there would have, the folks walking through the plaza would have had a much better idea of what to expect the whole way out instead of thinking they're walking from, you know, loose, crunchy snow to the icy area where Mr. Fleming actually fell.
I'm wondering, Mr. Bourne, whether you are trying to expand the doctrine of actual notice with your argument that they created the problem. It's one thing if the evidence shows that they know that they're creating the problem, but there's a lot of human endeavor and a lot of human conduct in which people do things and they're not aware that they're creating a problem. So for your argument to work, don't you have to be able to establish that they knew that they were creating the problem?
These folks that that perform snow removal are professionals, and there's a procedure in place to make sure that the area is kept safe for the students of the three various colleges that are housed there or at a campus. There are two things that are not questioned that they knew. They knew, number one, the procedure was to try to be proactive, put down ice melt. Two, the procedure was to clear from the middle, clear all the way out, do multiple passes in the arch plaza in order to do a better job of snow removal. The governmental entity is actually trying to restrict the already restrictive governmental immunity waiver in a couple different ways.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think the answer to my question is either yes with an explanation or no with an explanation. Don't you have to show that they knew that they were creating the problem for your argument to work?
Pursuant to the waiver, we would have to show actual knowledge of the dangerous condition. And a governmental entity can receive knowledge through its agents and employees. It's clear its agents and employees did this work, were in the area. It's also clear that the governmental entity knew that it didn't follow these particular procedures that it set up itself for snow removal in this area. If the court is asking, would the facilities manager, the director, have to come in and say, oh, we knew the condition was dangerous? No, it doesn't. I don't think it rises to that level. First of all, that's not often going to happen. But all the other evidence of what occurred on the day of the fall, the activities of the of the governmental entity, all that goes to the notice requirement. And again, what we're hearing in the briefing is an argument that there must be a phone call, there must be a letter written. In discovery in this case, we asked for those kind of things. And the governmental entity, we're not aware of any statute that requires governmental entities to keep logs on these kind of things. So our response in discovery was, yes, there's been other slip and fall incidents on campus over the past few years, but there's no specific logs of calls of complaints on in this particular area in the arts club. Your Honor, I think I'm down to a minute and 30 seconds, so I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Of course, Counselor.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Andrew Katara, Crown Assistant Attorney General, Registration 25600, representing Auraria. The issue before the court this morning is whether the trial court committed, whether the trial court's finding that there was no actual notice was clear error. And since the record supports the finding that there was no actual notice, the decision should be affirmed. The standard under 106, under 2410-106-1D3 requires actual notice, which is distinguishable from constructive notice, which can be defined in the definition of generic 103.1.3. So here, the court made a finding in its, at the Trinity hearing that there was no evidence presented to it to show that there was, that already had any knowledge and a notice that there had been ice formed in the area where the plaintiff fell.
Counsel, can you respond to your opponent's contention that by, I guess, partially sweeping part of the area, Auraria in fact created a danger, and that by creating that danger, that it effectively creates tinnitus? At least that's how I understand the argument. Can you respond why that is or is not sufficient under the statute?
Yes, unless Auraria knew after it swept the area that there was ice forming, and there's no evidence that it did, then there is no notice. And the court went further.
Pardon me, counsel, and please correct me if I'm mispronouncing your name. Is it Katakawari?
Katarikawe.
I'm sorry.
Katarikawe.
Katarikawe?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. But we have a cold event, a weather event, and they sweep the snow. Isn't it reasonable to expect that the sweeping is going to cause the snow to be brushed away and ice to remain?
On the contrary, Your Honor, one would expect that once they sweep away the snow, then there would be no snow to form ice.
Well, but if it had been warm the day before, isn't it just common sense that the ground would be warm when the snow falls, and thus the snow would melt, and that there would be this underlying patina of ice?
We don't know the answer to that, Your Honor, because there was no evidence presented to show what the temperature was, when this ice formed, how long it had been present. So there's just nothing in the record to answer that question. Now, having found that the study required actual notice, the trial court went even further in an over-abundance of caution and looked to Martinez for direction and went into the constructive notice argument. And in its analysis, it found that there had to have been notice, or the condition had to have been the kind that already should be on notice to have been going to check into the area. In other words, as in Martinez, we had an area that was known to be chronically a problem whenever there was ice and snow. Whereas in this context, there's nothing in the record to show that there had ever been any complaints about ice forming in this area or anyone slipping and falling. There was no phone call, there was no history, nothing.
If we were to conclude that the record supports the trial court's determination that there was not actual notice, do we need to discuss constructive notice?
I do not believe so, Your Honor.
And why not?
That's because the statute is very specific. It says that there has to be actual notice, not constructive. And that's a heightened standard when analyzing whether there is notice. So it only goes to actual, not constructive.
Thank you.
Can you tell me why the knowledge of the employee who ran the sweeper over the one area, why that knowledge isn't imputed to Auraria?
Well, there's nothing in the record that shows the whoever plowed the area employee that she realized there was ice in the wake of the plowing. And therefore, if he had no knowledge of the ice, then there's no reason to impute that to the employer.
What about the professor's testimony that this area was known to become icy? How are we to take that?
If I remember correctly, he said yes, there would be snow, sometimes icy, but he himself had never called to complain, and he was not aware of anyone else who had called to say this is an area that needs particular attention. So as far as notice goes, that doesn't have any impact on the trial court's finding, which I believe is supported by the record and should be affirmed. Plaintiff also goes into the argument that the Auraria failed to follow its protocol for snow removal, but there's nothing in the record that says it did or did not, because the only testimony that plaintiff relies on is its own expert's testimony, who admitted that the trainee, that she was not on campus on that day. She had no personal knowledge. She simply reviewed the records that were provided during discovery. And Mr. McLean, who was the director of maintenance and operations at Borrelia, who was in charge of snow removal at the time of the Trinity, he testified that she did not know what the protocol was at the time of the fall because he was not the director then. But the protocol that council relies on in arguing about application of magnesium chloride is based on the protocol at the time of the Trinity, which was years after the fall, which was, that's when they apply magnesium chloride. So I would ask the court not to put too much weight into the argument because it's based on a premise that's not supported by the record. And with this said, I would ask the court to affirm the district court because the record supports its finding that there was no actual notice.
Counsel, if I want to clarify the last thing that you said. You said that the record doesn't support the magnesium chloride argument. Is that your argument?
Yes, Your Honor.
And I want to make sure that I understand that. You're saying that at the time of the Trinity hearing, that was the protocol. But are you saying that there was evidence in the record to show that that protocol was not in place at the time of the fall, or that there's simply no evidence to show that it was in place at the time of the fall?
There was absolutely no evidence to show that it was in place. And I refer to the record at page 360, lines 15 to 20, where Mr. McLean testified he did not know what they did back then at the time of the fall, but this is what they did under his watch.
So at this point, the record is vague. They may have done the same thing. They may not have done the same thing. We don't know.
That is correct, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel, you've got a minute 29.
Thank you, Your Honor. The vast majority of the argument today has focused on the notice requirement. I think that is absolutely appropriate, as is the most important issue of what we're talking about today. I do want to address two other issues brought up in the answer brief. One, the Auraria argues that the Arts Plaza is not a sidewalk under the definitional statute. I would like to just point out to the court that in this particular waiver, the word sidewalk is not used. It's just public walks leading to a public building. And the prior waiver provision in the same statute, the word sidewalk actually is used in a different waiver provision. Obviously, the General Assembly intended that waiver to be a little bit more broad than the more specific word sidewalk. When could include stairs, wheelchair ramps, all these other type of entrances to a public building. Secondly, in the answer brief, the governmental entity argues that it's not a walkway leading to a specific public building. The evidence in the record shows this is type of College Tech Quad, the campus buildings surrounding it. There are multiple campus buildings. Both those readings would narrow an already restrictive statute that courts have said but needs to be interpreted in favor of injured victims because it's the type of statute that restricts access to courts rather than expands it. And I believe I'm out of time.
Thank you, counsel. We thank you both for coming today. We appreciate your briefs and we appreciate your arguments. The case will stand submitted and an opinion will issue in due course. And safe journey home to both of you.